Right. So that would be a nine blot. Well, nine blot. It gets a little bit easier at the very end because the last couple of pages or so is mostly Agata. Right. Some beautiful Agata, really some of the outstanding Agata that we have. Yeah. But here we're still stuck with arguments concerning Kalamon. Right. Okay, that's all right. It's good for us. It sharpens our brain at the same time. Right. You know, if you take a look at the Siddur, before Amar Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Elazar or Chanina and so on, you see, there's a little statement that says, you know, that if you study halachas every day, then muftach lo shu ben olam haba, you know. Right. So this is an assurance to you that you'll be in the olam haba, right? So we have to study halachas. Okay. So the Havayu, it says, and both of them are Liba and Rabbi Yehuda. Both of them, really, their points of view were in connection with the teaching that been given previously by Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanya. And what is this teaching? All right. Rabbi Yehuda points to the business about Notzar. Remember we said Notzar means that, you know, you're supposed to burn whatever part of the sacrifice has not been eaten during the allotted time. That's Notzar. Okay. And if you violate it, of course it's a violation of the law. Right?
Right.
So, it says, the Tanya, we learn. Pasuk says, "V'lo sasira mimenu ad boker," right, that you are not to leave over any of this until the following morning. "V'hadosa mimenu ad boker," and whatever remains until the morning, then the rest of it should say, "Ba'esh tisrofu," right? In other words, then you have to burn it in fire. So, why the juxtaposition of this business? I mean, it says you're not allowed to, but if you do, then, you know, anything that you do, you have to burn, okay?
Right.
So he says, Boa Kosov, right? So therefore it shows that the Pasuk in the Torah has come in order to teach us, Litain Ase Achalos Ase, to give us an affirmative action after a negative one. Loma to tell us, She'en Lokin Alog, that you don't get Balkis if you do then the affirmative after, you know, in other words, you make good or you rectify.
You burn it,
By burning in this case.
Right.
So this is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So, how does this relate to Rabbi Yochanan to Reish Lakish? So this is what Gemara says. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, Diyek. Rabbi Yochanan, now the word Diyek, it's we like
precise,
to test.
Yeah, to be more precise.
Right, it's precise. In other words, he works precisely on what phrase? He says, Diyek, Hochi Tamo Deva Kosub. This is the reason, he says, why the Pasuk, in other words, you know, Ba'esh Tisrofu, Ba'anosim Minu Adboka Ba'esh Tisrofu, it's came, he says, if the Pasuk did not have that clause telling us how you can rectify, then Loke.
Then definitely
he should have gotten Malkus for what? Because he violated the Lesser Sukkot and not Boker. It's only because the Torah came and gave a remedy subsequently that, you know, that took away the punishment of Malkus from him. So he says, Alma, then we see therefore that Hasra Sofek Shema Hasra, it says that even a doubtful Hasra is still a Hasra. How is it doubtful? It's doubtful in the sense that we don't know, is he going to do it within the allotted time or not, and so on and so forth. So that therefore there is an element of doubt which is involved in it. But nevertheless, he is warned that if he's not going to do it, then he's going to get malchus. Okay, let's take a look at the Rashi, because again, I'd like to help us as much as possible get used to understanding what Rashi is trying to say over there. Okay, so on the fourth line over there, he says v'tarbayu. Okay,
yeah.
See that?
Yeah.
V'tarbayu alib Rabbi Yehuda.
Right.
Okay. The Omar who said gabe nosor in connection with nosor, he says it's tarich. I must have l'netuke lav la'ase, the fact that the Torah transmutes, right, the negative into an affirmative. In other words, it rectifies the negative by giving us an affirmative in the same pasuk. even though, number one, it is still doubtful, right? The love, she'imba masahu, and also, it's also a love in which there was no action, because after all, what was the action? The action is that he simply let it stay over. Well, let it stay over, he's not doing anything, you know, he's just not doing anything, that's all.
Affirmative malfeasance.
Right, yeah. So Rabbi Yochanan, diek mino, he says, Rabbi Yochanan, he concentrated on the fact that it says, Almo, we see that Hasra's Safek, Shmo Hasra, right? That is, the doubtful Hasra is still Hasra. But Reish Lakish, on the other hand, Diek Minor, right? That Alma Lav Shein B'Maseh Lokan Olav, right? That, you know, in other words, that if the rectifying clause hadn't come along, then even though he had not done anything in that, he simply let, you know, he let it stay over, he didn't do anything, so he still would have gotten Malkus for it. Well, Akami Porich the Tabayu Ikola Medak Minor. And afterwards they're going to ask the question, you know, both of them have to learn from this particular phrase, right? And each one, as we see, sees, you know, his own point of view in what to stress in this teaching of Rabbi Yehuda. Okay? Yes, Reish Lakish Diyek Hoki Taba Devar Kosev, right? And he sees it too, that the reason why we have this pasuk, ha loy bohav kosev, if the pasuk, you know, ba'esh tisrofu hadn't come along, then alma, right? Loke, right? So alma, so we see lav shem b'maseh lokan alav. All right. Now, the question is as follows. All right, so now we know that Rabbi Yochanan has his position, and Rabbi Shimon Lakish has his position. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Lakish, name ho vada hasra safeku. So, tell me, didn't Rav Shimon ben Lakish also feel that certainly there is a very definite hasra over here that's involved? It's not simply that it is, you know, hasra something. So the answer is sova lo keidach tado de Rav Yehuda. So he followed the opinion given by Rabbi Yehuda someplace else, the Tanya, as it is written. And here we have an interesting case. It says, "Hikozeh dechozav hikozeh kilel zeh dechozav kilel zeh hikesh shnehem bevasachas or kilel shnehem bevasachas chayev." Right? Okay. So far, here's what the situation is. Okay. Let's take a look at the Rashi, because Rashi explains it very nicely. It says, yeah, Gidok Tani says the Omar Lo Shmo Hasra. The Tani says he calls it. You see that he calls it over there.
Yeah.
It's roughly about
sort of in the middle.
Right,
of the fence,
right.
Yeah.
It's in the middle over there. First, you have a lot of little references on the side over there,
yeah.
A lot of
it's
quotes, like, and then right, two lines down, it says he calls it. All right, it says Misha Geirash Yisishto. We're talking this time about a man who divorced his wife, right? Vinises, and she married somebody else, the older, and she gave birth. Okay. Now, there's a law that when you give a get, a woman is not allowed to remarry for 90 days. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why is she not allowed to marry for 90 days? Because, exactly. You know, we want to know who is the father of the child. Is it the husband who divorced her? Or is it a new husband? So therefore, she's not allowed to remarry for 90 days. By the way, in Almana, it's the same deal. Precisely the same reason. We want to be certain of the paternity of a child. But what did this woman do? This woman, immediately, as soon as she got divorced, she ran and she got married to somebody else. Okay? Which, it's violating the law of the rabbis, but nevertheless, from the point of view of Midoraisa, so to say, you know, it's not a violation of Torah law. It's only a violation of the rabbinic ordinance, okay? So, she got married, the Yolda, right, and she gave birth, Sofek ben Tes lo Rishon, Sofek ben Zayin lo Achron. And we don't know whether this was a 9 month old child of the first husband, or a 7 month
premature,
slightly premature. I mean, 7 months already is not so premature either, but it's a little premature, of the second husband. Okay, so here's this kid. It's now, he's grown up a little, all right? And he has two possible fathers. Okay? That's two possible fathers. He kazev, so first he hit this father. The chazar, the he kazev, and then he went and he hit the other father. B'shtei hasroz, right? And each time he was warned. The heavier law called chada hasroz suffik. So the point is that each time, if he is warned separately, then in that case it is hasroh sofek. Why is it a doubtful hasroh? Because we don't know which one actually is
the father.
If he strikes his father, who is the real father, then in that case, of course, he deserves the death penalty. Of course, I mean, there are other hedges about that, you realize. But theoretically, he is liable to the death penalty for that, okay?
Okay.
But what if he hits some, a man who actually is not his father? Then in that case, all that he would be required to do, is if he hurt him and so on, whatever, maybe, right. The guy could sue him or something like that, you understand?
Yeah.
And try to get his doctor's bills and
Sar
and Boshas, etc.
Why is this an incorrect warning? Because one of the men that he hit was his father,
Right. So they gave him a warning, but the guy actually wasn't his father. That's why it's a suffix. It's doubtful.
But for the other it isn't.
They don't know which
it is. Right. One of them is, one of them isn't.
Yes.
But we don't know which it is. We don't know. So that therefore he cannot get the death penalty if that's the case. Because there wasn't a Hasra's vadai. Okay? Hasra's suffix.
Why is that?
Why is that? Because the person he hit may not have been his father.
He's given a specific warning, don't hit your father.
Right.
We don't know which of the two men are his father.
This is correct.
But we say each time, don't hit your father.
Right.
We don't know that's your father.
Correct.
Don't hit your father.
Right.
Don't hit your father.
Right.
One of the times,
but
he's innocent. But the other time, he's liable. He's guilty. Doesn't matter.
Why does it matter?
It's like if someone is in a fight, Bob and I are in a fight with you, all right?
Right?
And you get beaten up, and you bring us to court, and you say, these men are guilty of assault and battery. Look what they did to me. And we say, but we don't know which one of us hit you, knocked out your teeth, and blackened your eye.
Yeah.
So, I mean, unless you can show specifically which one of us hit you, did this, then we're innocent. It's just as no. It's all part of the same action. You're both in it. You're both hitting him, so you're both liable for it. Well, I'm just making this
adding
argument.
Them up together.
All right.
But the fact is, I mean, that in the individual case, it still is Hasra Sofik because we don't know who is the father. It's doubtful whether at the time when they gave the warning that it was given. Okay.
The individual. Yeah.
All right. So let's review this again. All right.
Sorry, I got it.
Okay.
I thought I had
something
here.
Rabbi Yehuda, we learned he kazeh, right?
He
hit this man.
Right.
And then he again hit the other guy. Okay?
Right.
Or Kilel. The reason why they say Hiko and Kilel is because we have in Parsha Mishpatim, we have two different things, right? The Marke Obi Vyimo Mosumos, it says over there, that if a person strikes his father or his mother, he shall be put to death. And then we have another pasuk which says, "Kalel or viviyimo mosumos." If somebody curses his father or his mother, then he shall be put to death. Of course, as I said, there are hedges around it. One hedge is the fact that if he hits, it has to be a blow which causes actual physical damage, a chabura, as we would say. In other words, it causes something. That we could see a welt or something like that. If he simply struck, but there was only a glancing blow and nothing, no harm was done, then that would get him off the hook, okay?
Is it okay for a father to hit a child?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Even if he causes swelling or something like
sure,
yes,
sure.
Yes, because that's considered part of the parental mitzvah, so to speak, in order to train his child that he should grow up to be a good law-abiding person. Okay? Yeah. Also to give him an incentive that if he doesn't study Torah the way he should, he'll also get a good club.
In advance.
Okay? This we learned the Gemara in Kiddushin.
That's
long,
right.
Long
well,
time ago.
Ago.
Right.
Mifra'ah.
Now, okay. So this is where it stands at the moment, right? So this is why it says hikon, and it also says kilal shteim. All right.
Okay.
Kilal zev, of course, kilal zev. Now, what happens, however, hikon shteim v'asachas? What happens if he hit both of them simultaneously? In other words, the two of them, both possible fathers, were standing there, and he hit both of them. Okay. At the same time. Oh, kilal shteim v'asachas. Or if he curses. By the way, with the curse, what is the hedge over there? Curse has to be that he invokes God's name in cursing the you know, the father and the mother.
Uh-huh.
It's not simply to call somebody a dirty name or something, but you know, you actually are cursing him in the name of the Rebbeinu Shalom, you see.
Yeah.
So that's already, you know, a more serious business, you see.
But in each of these cases, he has to have a warning in advance.
He has to be warned. If he's going to be liable to the death penalty, right? You cannot sentence. Correct. But as we've already learned many times, you cannot sentence a person to a death penalty, or even to malchus,
unless
you have hasra.
Yeah,
right. It has to be warned that this would be the punishment if he violates, you know, the law of the Torah in this regard. Okay.
And just picking up on Irv said, this has been my question too, is that if someone has knowledge of the Torah,
yeah,
right, that doesn't suffice as a warning.
Yes, it does suffice.
It does
because
suffice.
We learned several pages back an idea which is repeated here in the Gemara Makkos, also in Sanhedrin, namely that chaver eino tzorech hasra, that if a person is a Torah scholar, then he does not require hasra, because kedei shalonit lo hasra, it says over there, because hasra was only given kedei lahavchin ben shegeg lemezin, so that we would know the difference, to make a distinction between somebody who does something in by mistake, right, as compared to somebody who does it deliberately. And a chover is expected to know the difference between it.
Chover
meaning a Talmud Chacham, right? Somebody who studies Torah and who who knows what the law is. Yeah, but still, from a point of view of reality, some know and some don't. Okay. Yeah.
I guess I don't know what got into me today. I guess what this says is that ignorance of the law is an excuse, right? If you're not specifically warned and you don't
it's
know the law...
It's an excuse only to the extent that you would not get, let's say, capital punishment or maybe malchus.
Right. Okay,
but it
you.
Doesn't mean that it's an excuse as far as, you know, the
discipline
of
errors.
Right. You still have done something to another person.
Right, okay.
And, you know, you deserve some kind of a punishment for it. What the punishment specifically? Well, this depends on the circumstances. Okay? All right. So, if he did it bevas achatz, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then in that case, chayav. Okay?
Mm. That makes sense.
All right. This is what the statement said. Now, along comes Rabbi Yehuda, because remember we said that they were both based their arguments
on
upon Rabbi Yehuda.
Right.
So, what did Rabbi Yehuda say? So Rabbi Yehuda, let's see, a little bit of Rabbi Yehuda, right? He says Bevas Achas Chayov, right? He says that if they were warned, you know, and it happened simultaneously, that you know, he hit both of these men, then in that case Chayov. In other words, he would be liable to the death penalty. But Bezeh Achar Zeh, if he hit one and then another, Potter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then he would be. He would not get the death penalty. All right. For the reason that we explained, namely that we consider it what? Asra Sadek, right?
Yeah, Asra Sadek.
Now, the Rabbi Yochanan.
Consider
it
what?
Asra Sadek.
In other words, a doubtful warning that he got, because we don't know which one is really the father. Okay? We're talking about a case where a child was born And we don't know whether it was from one man or from another man, okay?
So he hit one and then he hit the other. So that's
right, right, right. But it depends when he hit them also. It depends when he hit them. If he hit both of them at the same time, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, he would be liable. But if he hit them on two different occasions, first he hit this one, and then let's say a month later he hit the other one or something like that, then he would be potter, okay? Right, we don't know which one it is, all right.
Well, why does it make any difference whether you hit him simultaneously or
no, because simultaneously we know that one of them must be the father.
I see.
The warning would come,
right,
then
exactly.
one of them
must be the father at the time.
I see.
Okay, and that's the reason why, whereas separately we don't know, but together one of them actually has to be. So we have to assume that at least one of the person that he struck, you know, was his real father.
Yeah, the action of hitting is covered by one warning.
Yeah.
So he hit both of them at one time. Well, possibly, I guess, sure.
Okay. Now, getting back to Rabbi Yochanan, all right? Rabbi Yochanan, name hovadai lav sheim b'masehu. Now, in the case of Rabbi Yochanan, didn't we say before that... Okay, remember again, he said at the top of the page, right, that why, in the case of the guy who said, I take an oath that I'm going to eat this piece of bread today, right, and then he didn't do it, so he doesn't get Malkus. Why? Because according to Rabbi Yochanan, it was a lav she'in bo maaseh, right? It was, and there was no physical action that the guy did. He didn't eat, so that's a physical action. So in that case, that's the reason why he doesn't get Malkus. Okay. So
this is Rabbi Yochanan.
This is Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. All right. So getting back to him, right? So he says, Rabbi Yochanan, name ho vadai lav she'in bo maasehu. Isn't this a case, you know, where definitely he did not do any definite action? So by law, so he was of the opinion, in accordance with what Rav Ibi Bar Ovin said, Omar Rav Amram, the name of Rav Amram, who said in the name of Omar Rav Yitzchok, and the name of Rav Yitzchok, who said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, right? And who said it in turn, that as follows. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says, Rabbi Yehuda says, Mishum Rabbi Yossi Haglili, in the name of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, in other words, who was Rabbi Yehuda's teacher? Was Rabbi Yossi Haglili, who was a much earlier authority, okay? He was a teacher of Rabbi Yehuda. All right, so what did he say? He said, "Kol lo sa'aseh shebat Torah," right, every thou shalt not that we find in the Torah. So, this is the following general rule. Lav sheyesh bo maaseh, if it is a negative commandment and there is an actual physical action involved in it, then loken alav. If you violate it, then you get
malchus.
Okay? Lav she'en bo maaseh. If it is, however, a negative transgression, but there is no actual physical effort that's involved in it, right? Then ein loken alav. Okay? You do not get malchus. Chutz. Except for three cases, right? Chutz bin Amishbo, Umeymer, the Hamakalil Eschaviru B'Shem. All right. What are the three different cases where, even though technically it is not a physical activity which is involved, but nevertheless he deserves Malkus for a violation? So these are the three cases, he says.
Excuse me, didn't he make a brook over it?
No. Where'd you get that idea from? All he did is he made a shvua. Shvua means that he takes an oath. Right. A shvua is definitely more severe than a neder. A neder is a vow. Say, I vow that I'm not going to do this, okay? Or
I'm going
the language that the Gemara would use, for example, in Gemara in the Dorim, is, you know, kona. In other words, this is prohibited to me, okay? As if it were a sanctified object or something like that, that I'm not allowed to have any hanoa from. I'm not allowed to have any benefit or any pleasure from it. You understand? So, this is what he says. All right. Shvu already is like a step further because you're actually taking an oath. In other words, you say, I swear to the Beit Shalom, and he says that I'm not going to eat this. Now, that already is a pretty... It makes it more.
Right.
It's not as severe as the other. Okay? It's not as severe.
So the shvu is more than a neder.
Shvu is definitely stronger than the neder, right. But of course, you know, when we have Hatoras Nedarim, we say, called neder, called shvu, and so on and so on. Right, yeah. What? No, he says Shavua. The man said Shavua Shelo Ochal. Shelo Ochal. Says, I take an oath. Right? I take an oath that I'm going to eat this piece of bread. And then he doesn't eat the bread. Yes. That's why. I mean, the idea of a Shavua is that you involve the Rebbeinu Shel Olam in it.
Yes, there's punishment for it.
He's not going to get Malkus for it. Okay? What the Rebbeinu Shel Olam decides to do, it's a different story. But he doesn't get Malkus because this is a lav she'ein bo maaseh. Okay? Now it all depends on whose point of view. According to Rabbi Yochanan, lav she'ein bo maaseh, you don't get Malkus, okay? You understand? Reish Lakish said in that particular case, he should deserve Malkus, even though it's a lav she'ein bo maaseh, but why is he excused from it? Because he says it's Hatzras Sofek. It's a doubtful warning that has been given to him. Okay? So we know where Reish Lakish stands. According to Reish Lakish, Lav She'ein Bo Maaseh is not an excuse. If you do something, right, and you violate a negative commandment, then you should get punished. Malkus. Okay? But if you weren't given proper warning that this would be the punishment, then in that case you get off the hook. Okay? Yes, in this area, correct. Well, listen, he's entitled to disagree.
Only sometimes.
If he felt that he has good reason to disagree, he wants to express his point of view. Okay, we're not going to squelch him. Doesn't mean that the halacha necessarily has to follow him. You understand? But nevertheless, he's entitled to state his view of what the halacha should be.
Three exceptions.
Halavai that I knew as much as Reish Lakish, and halavai that I knew as much as Rabbi Yochanan.
Amen.
He came from the bottom and went to the top.
Yes, of course, he had a very colorful history, as you know, Reish Lakish. Right, yeah. He was a Baal Teshuva, that's absolutely correct. The Rabbi Yochanan took him as a son-in-law. But later in life, they had awful fights, and they disagreed with each other. Yeah, well, Reish Lakish actually was the one who died, and then Rabbi Yochanan had aggravation. I mean, that happened. Yeah. It's a tragic business. We're coming into the period of the Sefirot. One of the reasons given in the Gemara as to why so many of Rabbi Akiva's disciples died during this time is to say that they weren't noichen zeh lazeh, that they were not polite one to another in their arguments concerning Torah.
What does it say in Torah also? I mean, it seems ridiculous that just because somebody doesn't agree with somebody should be punished. Yet the higher you go on the ladder of spirituality, the quicker you get punished when you do a small.
Well, that's a different story. It's a different story. In other words, if the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is medakdek, in other words, he's very strict. You know, with the tzaddikim kechut hasara, like a hair's breadth. In other words, they are expected to follow a higher standard than the average person, so therefore the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is strict with it. This is correct. But on the other hand, again, I mean, but the reward would also be greater.
Certainly, Rabbi Akiva's students were on a big level. I mean,
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, an ordinary student to argue would be one thing.
Yeah, right, right. But it's not argument. It's how you argue. You understand? It's nochen zelazer. This is what they were saying. That they were not nice, they weren't polite to each other. So that's a different business. It's not a disagreement, but it's how you express this disagreement. They were nasty to each other, right? So, you see, it's a different aspect altogether. So getting back then, Rabbi Yossi Aglu said, "Kol lo sasha b'ter lav sheish b'masa lokin olav, lav sheish b'masa in lokin olav." That is his opinion. Chutz min anishba, with the exception of a person who takes an oath. We'll come back to that in a second. Umeimer, and the person who is guilty of the violation of what we would call tabura, and then the hamakales chaver b'shem. Or a person who curses another one and uses God's name in the curse. I said before about cursing a parent and so on, but it applies also to other human beings. Okay.
What is the second one? I'm sorry. What is the second?
The second one is Meimer. I'll come to that in a second.
All right, okay.
Rashi only comments on the very first one and then on the last one. Why he doesn't comment on the middle one, they finished. Okay. All right. But at any rate, where we just finished over there, alright, Bevasachas, we didn't do that Rashi yet, so let's take a look at that. That's getting back to the previous one, Bevasachas. In other words, where he simultaneously hits both of the men, right? Or he curses them, so he says, Bahasra Achas. And he received only one warning, right? But it was right, you know, in the very moment when they told him, you're not allowed to strike your father, you're not allowed to curse your father, and nevertheless he did it, right? The Havila Hasra's Badai. This is a definite Hasra, right? You have to, obviously, one of them has to be his father.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Alright, now what is Chutz bin Anishba? Says Rashi, in other words, using God's name. The Talmud before Ishbitamura, and the reason is given in Gemara and Tabura, Beferakam, in the first chapter. He says, V'yikashya ho de la'el, name nishbahu, and it's difficult, you know, that before we were also talking that he was nishba, v'amai potale Rabbi Yochanan, and why did Rabbi Yochanan excuse him? Bishum lav shein b'mase, right? On the basis of the fact that there was no definite deed, you know, that he did. So Behedya Mekmina law, Lahoda Katone Nishba Badova Sha'imba Masa Loka Bishvua to the Shela Ovar. Now this is what the Gemara is arguing in the Gemara in Shvuas. Kagon, for example, a man takes an oath and he says, Ochalti, I ate. In other words, let's say I ate this piece of bread, okay? Below Ochal, but he didn't actually eat it, okay? Or he said, lo achalti, I didn't eat it, right? The ochal. And he did eat. Mm-hmm. Okay? So in that case, we know that he was telling a lie, right? When he took this oath, and he said, either I ate or I didn't eat, you know, and it was just the opposite of what he had to say. But we know he told a lie. It was Shvua Sheker, if you wish, right? He's telling a falsehood, and therefore he gets Malkus. Why? Because he took God's name in vain, as we said before, you know, when he took such an oath, and it was a Shvua Sheker. Okay.
All right.
Aval, however, says Rashi, the Ochel, if a person says, I will eat, the Lo Ochal, and he doesn't eat, Lo Loki. He will not get Malkus for that. V'tamo meforish b'shuas v'tamura mikra. And there are psukim over there. If you want to look back, you don't have the Gemara over there. Because here I could take a look at the Gemara in Shua should be in here someplace. Usually they bind them together. Yeah. All right. Gemara and Shua's Chaf Aleph. Okay. All right. Gemara asks over there, if a person takes an oath, how do we know that he deserves malchus? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, he says, B'shem Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, incidentally, very interesting. He said in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, says, Omar Kro, he says, the Pasuk says, Lo Sisa, right? Thou shalt not bear, that's the way we translate it, right? Shema Rishem Lekech Lashav, right? Thou shalt not, in other words, shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, right? Ki lo yinakeh, and the, you know, that second commandment among the Ten Commandments says, because God will not hold guiltless, right? So he says, what does it mean, lo yinakeh? So he says, bezdin shel mala. In other words, the bezdin up in heaven. Okay? Ein menakin oso. They will not, you know, they will not hold him guiltless. Okay? Aval bezdin shel mata, but the court down below, in other words, the court that, you know, we have to deal with every day, malkin oso, they can give him malchus, or menakin oso, and that way they enable him to be cleansed, you know, from his sin. In other words, the malchus serves in order to cleanse him from the punishment that the Rebbeinu Shalom say might give him otherwise. You understand? Right, he gets him off the hook, so to speak. By giving him malchus, he gets off the hook as far as heaven is concerned, because he has suffered punishment for what he did, for taking an oath in the name of God in vain. Okay? So what do we see from here? Remember what we said just before. Namely, that this is one of the first cases, right? Nishba. In the case of the Nishba, if he takes the name of God in vain, okay? And as we said, you know, and he did so falsely by saying either I ate when he didn't eat, or I didn't eat and he did eat, right? Then in that particular case, of course, he could apply it to other cases. I mean, he could say maybe I didn't steal when he did steal, or something like that. You understand what I'm saying? So in that particular case, he gets malchus. Why? Because the court down below wants to punish him, and therefore, you know, that way his punishment in heaven will not be that bad. Okay? This is the idea. Alright, so this is one case. Now, what is Meimer? This Rashi doesn't explain it all. But obviously, the Gemara in Tamura says that if a person, you see, the Torah says as follows, that the idea of Tamura we find in the last chapter of the Sefer Vayikra. Okay? You know, the Chumash that we started reading now, okay? So in the very last chapter over there, they deal with various things, and one of them is the law of Tamura. Tamura means that I say I'm going to give this animal to the Beis HaMikdash as a sacrifice, okay? And then, lo and behold, without consulting the authorities, what did he do? He went and he substituted a different animal. So the law is that both the animal which he substitutes and the original animal, they are Kodesh L'Hashem. Okay? In other words, they belong to the Beis HaMikdash and so on. But it's a sin on his part to exchange one for another, because he's supposed to go through with his original promise. Okay? Here I'm not talking about the fact that, for example, he gave, let's say, an animal which was not fit for the altar. Had a blemish of some sort, and they gave it to the Beis HaMikdash as a donation. Goes to the temple treasury. Okay, then in that particular case, what is he allowed to do?
He's allowed to exchange.
Right, he's allowed to redeem it, not to exchange it, but he's allowed to redeem it.
Oh, okay.
In other words, he goes to the Kohen, who's, let's say, the temple treasurer.
Right.
Yeah. And he says, "I want to redeem the animal that I gave." So they allow him to redeem it. He pays money. And also he pays an additional 20%. Okay? And this, you know, is an additional income for the treasury, the Beis HaMikdash. So that's not Tamura. Tamura, as we said, is what I said to begin with, namely that he promises to give this animal, animal A, to the Beis HaMikdash,
right.
And it's a perfectly good animal fit to go as a sacrifice,
right,
and
right.
Instead he decides, I'll give them animal B instead. Okay? So both A and B have to go. But since he has violated the promise that he made to the Beis HaMikdash, so therefore he deserves Malkus. Okay? No. Redeeming, as I said, this is a different business than Tamura. Redeemer is what we call Pidyon. Pidyon means that you redeem it. And in this particular case, how do you redeem it? You go to the temple treasury, treasurer, treasury, you understand? And you buy back the animal that you gave, okay? It doesn't have to be an animal. It could be any object that you give to the Beis HaMikdash. You can buy it back by paying the value of it, as determined, you know, by the Kohanim who are assessors, and adding 20% to it, okay?
But actually, in this case, he's losing both animals.
In this case, sure. Right, absolutely. All right, let's assume that his intention was good, and that's precisely what he wanted to do. But still, he violated what he had promised. It was a violation of the promise.
Does that mean that's Raisa? Does that mean Raisa?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely.
It's not a question.
Of course. Right, absolutely. I mean, take a look, and it says so specifically, right? Lo yomir behemo bevehemo. This is what the pasuk says. He's not allowed to exchange one animal for another. Then the imhomer yamirenu, but if he does so anyway, v'hoyahu is murasoyeh kodesh l'Hashem, then both this animal, okay, and its substitute, they are all of them kodesh l'Hashem. So he gets malchus because he violated that. But finally, what is the other one? Mekalas chaveru b'shem, that Rashi comments on. All right. That's the next one over there.
Oh, so Neymir is like Lahamir.
Yeah, Lahamir.
That's like when you
to
go
change,
to a bank.
To change,
and right, exactly,
right. Exact, right.
Oh.
Of course. Absolutely. Yeah, that's the origin of the word. Yeah.
When somebody gets malchus, is there a stipulated amount, or is it very case to case?
No, he said 39.
Yeah.
39.
He's, to begin with, malchus is 39 blows. But if the court or the physician who has to be around over there determines that the person cannot stand that amount, you understand? Then in that particular case, they can reduce it. But always it should be reduced by a multiple of 3. Okay? In other words, it's not 39, then maybe it would be 36, or it would be 33, or it would be 30, or something like that. It's a multiple of 3. Okay, so, yeah, so Kales Chaveru B'Shem, in other words, he uses God's name, right? In uttering it, and as we said, yeah, right, and the Rashi doesn't comment on that. Okay, but I already explained to you. You are cursing and using God's name, and, you know, it means that you are dragging in God into something where you have a personal fight with somebody else, you understand, and you have no business taking God's name in vain, and for that you deserve malchus, okay? All right. So, at any rate, we have a little, you know, we have a problem over here. So he says, Kasha, there is a difficulty. It's a difficulty, the Rabbi Yehuda, right? Between one statement of Rabbi Yehuda that was quoted higher up on this page and the other one which was quoted lower down. Namely, in the first one, if you remember over there, Rabbi Yehuda says that what? That if you have some way to make it good,
and
then in that case, ain lokin alav. Okay,
yeah.
This is what he said up above. Down below over here, yes. Whereas over here, you know, now we have another one where we say that there are laws she'ein bo ma'asa, right, where there is no action involved, and yet the person deserves malchus for the violation of it. You understand? So here we have two different statements made in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, and yet they are contradictory from this point of view. So he says, Ila Rab Shimon ben Lakish.
Lokin Alav She'ein Bo Ma'aseh.
Right.
Ein Lokin Alav.
Yes, well, that was explained afterwards, right?
No, Ein Lokin Alav Chutz Mein Nishma Mimarva Menach Mikolel. So if there's a
law
where it's filed by a Ma'aseh, there's an exemption except for the three more severe cases of
correct. So he says, if we follow the point of view of Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, so we would say, Trei Tanoi Aliva de Rabbi Yehuda. We would say then that the reason why we have a contradiction is because in reality we have two different Tanoim. Each one quotes a different idea that he heard from Rabbi Yehuda, and so therefore, this is why we have, you know, like a contradiction. But either Rabbi Yochanan, if it's according to Rabbi Yochanan, on kasha, right? Then there is no kasha. Why is there no kasha? He says so because Rabbi Yochanan could say, Hodi Day, the first statement represents Rabbi Yehuda's own idea. And the second statement is Hodarabe. It represents the idea of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, who was the teacher of Rabbi Yehuda. Doesn't mean that. But now we're taking a different example. So we'll stop at this particular point. Tanan right. Hossen over there, okay?
Tanan Hossen, yeah.
Right, okay.
Not all.
All right, so we'll continue from this. Some Yotza Hashem, as I say, 3 weeks from tonight. Because the next two Wednesday nights are Yom Tevim, and by then I'll be back again from Israel.
So what day will we meet again?
Well, let's see, what day would that be? That would be something like the 17th. I think it would be the 17th of April, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, that's right.
April 17th.
Yes. So 3 weeks from tonight, we'll meet. Daylight time already.
Meet at what time?
Well, we'll meet approximately, let's say, about a quarter to eight, 10 to 8,
after
whatever it is.
Tomorrow.
After Minchamara, great. Okay. Whatever it is.
Okay.
Do they have the plays?
No, not for
some. All right, we're in the middle. The middle of the line just before where it broadens out. Okay? You see the words Tanan Hossam? There's a little asterisk over there. Mm-hmm. And then it says Tanan Hossam. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Now, the selection that we're studying right now, you know, the sugyas, we would say, it continues again with other examples of the question of some of the basic ideas that we've been battling with for the past few sessions. One of the things that we're battling with, if you remember, is, for example, the question about kiyem velo kiyem and bitel velo bitel. Okay? Now, what was kiyem velo kiyem? To freshen our memory again, kiyem means, the best thing says to you, look, you have violated a law in the Torah, and if you don't immediately rectify it, then in that particular case, you're going to get malchus. Okay? That's kiyem velo kiyem. Okay? So that if lo kiyem, he didn't do what the Beis Din told him to do, then in that case he gets malchus. Okay. What was bitel, the lo bitel? If you remember, bitel means that he made it impossible for whatever it was that the Beis Din told him to do to ever be carried out. And then in that case he gets malchus. But if he never made it impossible, even if it wasn't immediately, but, you know, he said, I'll get around to it when I get around to it, then in that case he's not going to get malchus. All right, so those were a couple of the major, problems that we were working with the last few weeks, and the discussion still continues along some of these lines, okay? The other problem that we had is, of course, some other ideas which are basic, all right? Namely, we had, for example, the idea that when do we say that a person gets malchus? So we said that he gets malchus primarily for the violation of a lav, in other words, a negative commandment, right? which he didn't fulfill. However, does he get if there is actually no masa? In other words, there is no physical action involved in it. Then in that case, we see that the prevailing opinion was that lav she'im bo masa, the ain loike no lav. Okay? So that was another principle that we had. And then we also worked with another principle. And that was the problem of lav hanitak la'ase. Okay? What is the lav hanitak la'ase? So we saw that means that you have violated a negative commandment, but if you can rectify it immediately, particularly if the Torah, you know, tells you that here is a way in which you can rectify it, then in that particular case, you're not going to get malchus. Okay? So these were some of the things. On the other hand, we also saw that Rabbi Yochanan, for example, felt that if there was an assay, do this, this is what you're supposed to do, and then afterwards you had a negative, don't do this, or rather, then in that case, if you violate the assay, then in that case you deserve malchus for that. Okay? Now this is going to enter again into the discussion that we have over here. Alright. So we discussed such things as, for example, nosar, which is the classic case of a lav hanitak la'aseh. Again, what is nosar? Nosar, if you remember, means, you know, that you have a sacrifice and you're supposed to finish eating the prescribed the food of the sacrifice within a prescribed time. It might be, for example, let's say in the case of the Korban Pesach, it's only, you know, you slaughter it in the afternoon, it says Bein Horbayim, right? And then you start in, you have your Seder, you know, Kivo HaShemesh, when it's sunset, and so on, right? Because that is Moed Sesko Mitzrayim, the time when you're getting ready to go out of Egypt, although the actual Exodus didn't take place until the day, right? But nevertheless, this was the major event that took place at the night, which marked, you know, the Cheres. Okay. So, what does the rule say? The rule says that the Korban Pesach has to be eaten by when?
Before daylight.
No, it has to be eaten by Chatzos, by midnight. By noon. All right? This is why, for example, if we're on daylight saving time, we have a little bit extra time in order to do it, because for us, Chatzos would be until 1 o'clock in the morning, okay? But if you're still on standard time, as we were in Israel was already on daylight time, but you were still on standard time the first two nights of Pesach. So in that case, you had until midnight in order to eat the afikoman, which is representative in this case of the Korban Pesach. Okay? But what if you didn't finish eating the Korban Pesach by midnight? Then in that particular case, the law is that whatever is left over, you know, has to be burned. Okay. With others, it may be a sacrifice which we call Yom Volayla. So, for example, the Todah, okay, the Thanksgiving offering, which had to be eaten the day in which the sacrifice was brought, and you had all night long in order to finish eating it. But if anything was left over by daybreak, then that became Nosar, okay? And then with others you have what we call Shnei Yomim Velayla Echad. In other words, you have that day, you have all of the following night, and then you also have all of the next day until sunset. But what happens HaNosar B'Yom HaShlishi, then it becomes Pigul, as we say, okay? Lo Yerotze, in other words, it's no good anymore, and you know, you have to burn it. Okay, so the principle of Nosar is a classic case of the fact of a lav hanitak la'ase. Torah says you're not allowed to leave it over until, you know, beyond the prescribed time that there is. But if you did violate that law,
you could burn it.
You could burn it. That way, you know, you don't get malchus for the violation. Right. All right. So that was a classic case. All right. Now, getting back over here, they are going to bring now a couple of other cases, analyzing them and seeing how these ideas that we've been talking about for the past few weeks work out. Tanan Hossam. We learned over there, where is over there? In this case, happens to be Gemara in Chulin, where there is a chapter called Shiluach HaKein. Okay? Shiluach HaKein, that refers to the mitzvah where if you find a bird, a mother bird, nesting on the nest, right? and you know there are eggs over there, right? Or maybe there are young chicks over there. Then, if you want to have the eggs or the young chicks, then what do you have to do first?
Take the mother away.
Right. Shalech to shalach esayim. Okay. If you do that, in other words, if you let the bird, you send the bird away, so she's not there, and then you're permitted to do it. Yes, I bought him tikach loch. It says okay. So, what does the Gemara say over there? It says, "Hanotel aim al habonim." What happens if you took the mother together with the fledglings, right? The mother bird with the fledglings. So, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Loke, the Yonah Mishalech. Rabbi Yehuda says that he gets Malkus and he's not allowed to send the bird away. In other words, he committed such a violation that he gets Malkus. We'll get back to, because we have to analyze it in Russia.
He's not required to send it away because he's already done the deed and now he has to suffer the penalty.
Okay, good enough.
Are you saying that he takes the mother and the fledgling?
He did it. He did it already. Okay.
It already, yeah.
No, actually, he did it. You see.
Okay.
All right. Right. Because it says, "Aloikelemalabonim." Then in that case, what happens? So Rabbi Yehuda says, "Aloikevian mishalech." Okay. How can he send away if he already took it? The Chachamim Omrim, the sages say, "Mishalech." No, he sets the bird free. Right. The Yenu Loike. Okay. It doesn't get Malkus. Zehaklol, and then they make a general decision. What is the general decision? The general decision is, it's called mitzvah lisaaseh, right? Whenever you have a mitzvah that the mitzvah is you're not allowed to do something or other, sheyesh bo kumaseh, but you do have something whereby you can rectify it. There's a positive action that to follow in order to rectify the negative violation. Then in that case, in chayev molech, which means that you're not going to incur the penalty. Of course, what penalty are we talking about?
Okay.
Namely, the penalty of Malkus. Right. Okay. So, let's take a look, first of all, at Rashi. Okay. Says, Lo kevien mishalem. It's approximately opposite where we are. Okay. You see, Lo kevien mishalem?
Yeah.
Says, Lo kevien mishalem. He gets Malkus and he doesn't. Vein mishalem. And doesn't set the forfeit. It says, Kotsobar. Why? Because according to his reasoning, shaleach, in other words, set free the bird, me'ikora mashma, it means lo sikacho aim, right? Do not take the mother. So in other words, you have an affirmative command, and what is the affirmative command? The affirmative command is that if you see this bird, you must immediately send the bird away. Shalach mi'ikora mashma, right? That means to begin with, you have to send away. Lo sikacho aim ela shalchenet. Don't take the mother, but instead set her free. Kodem lekicha. Before you actually even put your hand forth to take anything, you have to send the mother bird away. The yapal gav dichsib bosar. And even though afterwards, the pasuk says, "Lo sikach," you know, to take, you know, the mother bird. So, right, the order actually is right. Yes, "Lo sikach im abunim," and then it says, "Shaleach to shalach." That's aim. But how does he take it? He takes it that shaleach to shalach. This is the first thing that you have to do. It's your initial action. Right, exactly. So it says the fact that it says afterwards, you know, "Lo sikach," it says, "Lav lemeimor." It's not to tell us, he says, the im lekocha, that if he took this bird, shalach, then in that case set it free, right? And then in that case, b'neheve lav shenitak la'ase, which would mean then that it becomes a negative which is transformed into an affirmative. Elo lav shekdomo asehi. But rather, this is a question of a lav which has where the asay, in other words, set forth the bird free, this comes first. And what do we learn? Rabbi Yehuda already said before that if you have a case where first you have an affirmative commandment which you violated, and then after that comes a negative, then in that case you get Malkus for the affirmative action which you failed to do.
If you succeeded in sending the bird
free, what would be the negative commandment that you would violate?
The negative commandment, okay. The negative commandment says specifically, lo sikacha imol abod. Okay?
Uh-huh.
All right, that's the negative, right? What is the affirmative? The affirmative says, shaleich to shalach esay, set forth the mother. Okay, now if we take it in the order in which it occurs in the pasuk, then in that case we have to take the second point of view, right? Which is what? That you do have a case of lo sikacha, negative commandment, followed by an affirmative commandment, and therefore this is a case of a lav shenitak la'asei. Okay, but that's the second view. It's not Rabbi Yehuda's view. However, Rabbi Yehuda's point of view is that in reality, you find a bird. What are you supposed to do? The answer is shaleich to shalach esaim. This is what you're supposed to do: set the bird free, chase it away, do whatever you want, but you know, take it away. And then, if you haven't done it, then lo sikach comes on the negative and says you're not allowed to do it. In other words, it's telling you, it's like explaining the fact that if you fail to do it, then you are violating a negative command as well, which is, you know, you're not allowed to do it. Okay, so but in this particular case, then what he's saying is that the affirmative action actually has to precede the negative. And in that case, we already learned before that if the affirmative action precedes, then in that case, he gets malchus for violating that. Okay? It's not a case of lava de the classe. So
that's
this
the
is what
the entire point
right.
of Rashi. Rashi
right.
is addressing
exactly.
the very thorny question of how
exactly.
you can turn this from a lava de the classe to
right.
a
right.
other.
Yeah. Right. So that this is the reason why he says, you know, loke v'yinu mishalech. Okay? He gets malchus. That's the important thing. Chachomim Eimrim, on the other hand, what did Chachomim say? Kos sabre, because they thought shaleach, right? It comes achar lo sikach, right? It comes afterwards. So mashma can accept. So the inference is exactly as the pasuk says. The habalei nitak la'ase. In that case, we have a negative commandment lo sikach, right? Which becomes, you know, commuted by the ase. The yim lo kachta. If you took it, then in that case, what shaleach sets forth. Okay. And finally, Zehaklol, and then they say this is a general rule that we learn from the case of the Shiluach HaKen, right? Namely, Kol Mitzvah Shlishtase, that Ein Leiken Oleho, right? Whenever you have a Mitzvah Shlishtase, you do not get Malkus for it, Elo Yekayim HaAse, as long as what? Do what the affirmative action says. Be a potter and he will be free from getting the malchus. Okay? All right. So now the Gemara continues. Continues, which is a statement that is said by Rabbi Yochanan.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm a little lost.
Okay.
Okay. I understand that if you violated the law,
right.
that the
you have an assay which
can rectify
it, right. Yeah.
And what is the new rule that's been enunciated? If you have a masa that comes first,
you have an assay. Yeah.
Okay, and it's violated, then there's no way that you can avoid
can rectify.
This is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, correct. But it doesn't mean that the Chachamim agree. Chachamim disagree, obviously, with it.
I'm sorry, and then the Chachamim say what?
They refer to the original text. They said the negative was the law of Cain.
In this particular case, there's no question, according to them, that the intent of the Pasuk is that, you read it exactly the way, it says, Lo sikach ha'im al abonim, that's the negative, and then it says, Shaleich to shalach esayim, which is the asay, right? Do this. And then you'll be free from malchus for violation. Because you're rectifying your violation of the negative command.
So it all turns on the timing of the sending off of the mother.
But it also depends on whose point of view we are propagating, okay? And obviously, when it comes to a question about Rabbi Yehuda versus the Chachomim are going to win out in this particular case. There are other times, however, where Rabbi Yehuda is going to have the halacha following him. It all depends on how it reads. Okay. Usually, if you have a statement made by an individual rabbi, and then it says Chachamim Omrim, usually the halacha is going to follow what the Chachamim say. I say usually, because there are exceptions, okay? If, on the other hand, you have, let's say, first a statement, you know, which is in general, and then after that you have an individual statement, maybe yes, maybe it will follow the individual, or maybe it will follow what was said first as a majority opinion. So in other words, majority, even though we have a general idea, you know, that majority rules, or as we would say, you know, acharei rabim lehatos, in other words, you have to make a decision according to how the majority view, but lav dafka, sometimes if we have compelling reasons to follow the individual rather than what was said in the name of the rabbim, then in that particular case you have to go according to the individual. So this is already, you know, it requires the analysis of the text of the Gemara, and of course how the later authorities after the time of the Gemara, you know, view it. Okay, all right.
Go back to the text.
Pardon? Yeah. Now we're going back to the text again. Okay.
Thank you.
Omar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said, "Ein lanu elo zos biolacheres." He says we have only this particular case and one other case. Terrific statement. So Rashi explains. He says, "Take a look." The next statement of the Rashi. Omer Rabbi Yochanan says, "Ein lanu." Why he says klomer? In other words, he says, "Mishaleach v'yeno loke." Right, that he has to set the bird free and he doesn't get malchus. But holo shilach. Let's say he did not set the bird free. Then in that case, what happens? Loke. He gets malchus. Okay. So Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan says, what? Bitlo, lo bitlo islay. Right? Remember, we said before that he believes in the principle of what? That if he made it impossible to carry out any rectifying action, then in that case, he gets malchus. But as long as he did not make it impossible to rectify it, then in that particular case he would not get malchus. Well, what would be a case, for example, of making it impossible to set the bird free?
Obviously
he could have killed the bird, right? Or maybe, let's say, he broke the wings of the bird so that the bird could not fly away. You understand?
Right.
So in any case, he made it impossible to set the bird free by having the bird fly away. Okay? So in that case, he would get malchus. But if
Rashi
there was the
possibility, Rashi only buys the kasheya only if he kills it.
I understand.
You can throw a bird out.
I understand, but
well, it would be very nice. But
you can take him away. You can push him away.
Certainly, the bird can't go on its own power. Okay. Okay. If you follow the principle of kiyumu below kiyumu, right? In other words, the Bezdin says you better do this right now, and you refuse to do it right now, then in that case you get malchus. Okay, but not everybody subscribes to that point of view. Okay, because others subscribe to the point of view of Rabbi Yochanan that you get malchus in the case of bitlo below bitlo if you made it impossible to do it, but as long as the possibility exists that you will comply, even if it's not immediately, you understand? Then in that particular case, you're not going to get malchus. Because it could be close ban sheyirtzeh. Anytime that he gets around to it, then he decides, okay, this is the right moment to do it. Okay? So, getting back to the Rashi over here. Right. So he says, klom v'shalayach in a loike. Olo shirach loike. Right? Rabbi Yochanan bitlo islay. He follows this principle. Umash malay. And therefore, he understands as follows that what? Mishaleach dikotoni, the fact that the Torah says, send away the bird, right? So, Mishaleach kishir yotze. Yeah, when he gets around to it and he decides that this is the right time to do it, so he'll do it. The yeno loka. And he's not going to get malchus. The emosai hu loka. So, when would he get malchus? The answer is kishir hargena, right? If he would kill the bird. Because then the avatil is ha'aseh b'yadayim. He has physically destroyed the possibility of ever being able to comply with the ruling, right? Behainu deko amar ein lanu. So this is why the why he said we have only this particular case plus one other. Klomer, in other words, afal gav dekotone masnisa zeh haklal. Even though we have learned a statement, as I told you, this was a statement, you know, in Chulin that they were quoting, okay? A general statement, the mashma, which tells us, call mitzvahs le'sase sheyesh bo kum aseh, shavos le'zu, right? That every case where you have a negative commandment, which has an affirmative commandment that can rectify its violation, is similar to this particular case. Nevertheless, he says, Ein onu lonu, onu ein lonu b'chulon shovelizu. We cannot find in all the various examples that we gave, which is similar to this, sheyehei potur hamalkas, sheyehei potur, that he would be that he would be free, you know, from malkas, right? Sheyehei potur hamalkas tolui b'kima asei, which is dependent upon the fulfillment of the asei elo. But bein kiyem, bein lo kiyem, potter. Whether he immediately followed the ruling of the Beis Din or not, then he doesn't get malchus. Because remember, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's bitlo velo bitlo. Okay? As long as the possibility always exists that you can do it, then in that case, even the Beis Din says that you do it right now, you say to the Beis Din, I will. I expect to do it, okay? And you don't get malchus, okay? This is his opinion.
Excuse the digression. How about if somebody else kills the bird?
Well, then he wouldn't get malchus because he did not make it impossible to do it. Yeah. So, Elozu, this is the only case, all right? The Odacher is one more. The Mashkachas, the who, where you'll find concerning it, the Loki, that he's going to get malchus al yedei bitul ha'aseh, that he'll get malchus because he made it impossible to fulfill the affirmative commandment. The ilu b'chulhu, because in all other cases lo mashkachas bitlo, we cannot find really a case of bitlo, that in other words he made it impossible ever to fulfill it, ela b'hanitrei, except in only these two cases. Okay, so in that case, now we've got to find where is the other case. So this is what they're going to look for right now, okay? So what is the other case? So, Amar Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar, when he heard that there's only this case, then the Shulach HaKen, and one other case, right? So he said to him, Hecha, where? Tell me, right? Tell me, where's the other case? So Amale, so he said to him, Lechisishkach, you'll find it. You'll find it someday, right? So Nofak, so he went out, dark, and he looked very carefully, right? Vyashkach, and he found it. And what did he find? Okay, he found something that we already quoted before. The Tanya we learned, if you remember, that Oines, a person who is a rapist, right? He rapes this woman, and of course the Torah said he has to marry her, right? Mm-hmm. And then what does this bandit do? Shegerash, right? He went and he divorced the wife, which he's not allowed to do because the Torah says, "Veloso yelo yisha leyuchal leshalcho kol yomav." Right? She has to remain his wife. She's not allowed to divorce her as long as he lives. Right? So, im Yisroel, we learned that if he is a Yisroel, right? Im Yisroel who? Then Machzir, right? Then he has to take her back in marriage. The yeno loike, and he does not get malchus. However, the Im Kohen who, what happens if he is a Kohen and he divorced her, then in that case, Loke, he gets Malkus, right? the Yena Masu, and he cannot take her back in marriage. Obviously, why can't he take her back in marriage? Because we learned that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a divorcee. And he already gave her a bill of divorcement, right? So that makes her already a Gerusha. Yes. Okay. I just wanted to point out there was years ago I used to love to read the stories of Israel Zangwill. I don't know if, he portrayed, you know, Jewish life in London many, many years ago. And he has one story over there, the children of the ghetto, where they have a mock marriage, you know, a couple, you know, some adults, they're having a party and say, oh, let's have a mock marriage, okay? So what happens? So a guy says to a girl, he says, okay, I hereby marry you right now. And then what did they discover? They discover that in reality he was a Kohen and she had already been divorced. So in that case, of course, the marriage had to be annulled. They had to give a get to her. So I don't remember now every exact detail. I'll have to reread it. But the point of the story is that it's a Maisa Shehoya, that a Kohen who divorces his wife, he cannot take her back in marriage. On the other hand, it's right. On the other hand, if a man divorces a wife and he's not a Kohen, then in that case, first preference, if he decides that he wants to remarry, is that he should remarry the woman that he divorced.
Right.
This is the first preference. Why? Because there's a Gemara that says that if a man divorces his first wife, in other words, the wife of his youth, then Mizbeach Moed Olav Divorce. I mean, the Mizbeach itself, the altar in the Beis HaMikdash, weeps tears for the fact that the marriage has not worked out and, you know, it came to a bitter end. So that if it can be rectified by a remarriage with the same parties, then in that particular case, then the altar will be happier. Okay? The Mizbeach will stop crying for that. All right, so that's the order in which it goes. Okay. I'm not sure if a person is absolutely miserable with his wife. I'm not saying that it's a mitzvah in that case. She's very, very unhappy. Look, there's already for that you have to go to Ann Landers and to adjudication and so on and so
forth.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. All right. So getting back over here. Right. So we learned then that what? That, he divorced her, right? So if he's a Kohen, then he has to get Malkus because Eidah Malkus is not allowed to. So this is a case like Bitlo Velo Bitlo, right? So he says, if we follow the suggestion, you know, we take the ruling of the authority who says that the Kiyim over the Kiyimu, then in that particular case, we say, look, the Beis Din said to this Oinesis, you marry her immediately. And he refused to do it, and what? He gets Malkus. As I said, these are two legitimate points of view, but they're in conflict with each other, right? Either you follow the system of Kiyimo Velo Kiyimo, in other words, it's all dependent upon whether you immediately obeyed what the Beis Din is doing, or you didn't, and you get Malkus if you didn't. But the other point of view, which says that bitlo below bitlo. So there we say that bitlo below bitlo means that if he made it impossible to fulfill what he was told to do by some action, right, as in the case of the Kohen, by divorcing her, he certainly cannot remarry her, right? So therefore he gets Malkus for that reason. But if it's low bitlo, as in the case, let's say, of the Yisrael, who divorced the woman, you know, who he was supposed to stay married to for a lifetime, you understand? Then in that particular case, as long as he says to the Beis Din, yes, I will marry her, just I have to straighten out my financial affairs before I do it or something like that, you understand? Then in that particular case, he's not going to get Malkus, because we say any time that he'll get around to it, right, l'shayirtze, when he finds, you know, that this is the right moment to do it, then in that case he's not getting any Malkus.
There's no time limit.
Right. So ela leman d'tni bitlo b'lebitlo, right? So he says bishlamor in the case of gabi shiluach hakein mashkachasla. We find a case where he makes it impossible ever to fulfill the mitzvah of setting the mother free, as what we already said. Let's say if he killed the bird, right? Ela ones. But in the case of the ravisher, bitloy velo bitloy heichim mashkachas. Tell me, where? How does it happen that he makes it impossible ever, you know, to fulfill the fact that he has to remarry her? So if we say he did it either katola by killing her, so he never could marry her.
He killed the bird, right?
So in that case, it's kam leib the rabba mine. This is, we have a basic principle in the Gemara, that where a person has two different penalties assigned, right, for the violation, and in that case, which penalty is he getting? The one which is the most severe one, okay? So, if he killed her,
it's murder.
In that case, it's murder. Obviously, then he deserves the death penalty for that. So, Omar Rab Shimi Mechoznoa. So, a Rab Shimi who came from a place called Choznoa, whatever it is. So, he says, I'll give you a different example. He says, Kegoin, for example, Shakibi Alo Kidushim Yahem. Let's say, after he divorces her, so then he accepts a marriage proposal, a marriage betrothal for her from a different man.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, if she is betrothed, she's married to another man, then in that case, how could he remarry her, right? So that would be a case of bitla below bitla.
Mm-hmm.
Then in that case, what should he get?
Malchus.
He should get, according to this point, he should get Malchus, okay? So Omar Rav, so Rav said, probably it should be Roba. Okay. He says to him, look, Ishibi say Shaliach. Let's say the woman said to him, okay, you divorce me, then find me another man. And I hereby appoint you my Shaliach that you go and find me a suitable husband. So if that's the case, right? Ihi komivatile, then in that case, she made it impossible for him, right? Because it was her own volition that made it impossible for him to remarry her. But Elo Shavisei Shaliach, let's say the woman never appointed him as her Shaliach to go and find marriage proposal from somebody else, to find Kedushim from somebody else, then Kol Kamine, does he then have the right even to act in such a manner as to say, I'm getting you another husband, when she never indicated she wanted. But like Klumhi, then in that case, whatever he did has no value whatever. Doesn't mean it's meaningless. Then in that particular case, what? He deserves a malchus for not, remarrying her. All right, so Elo Amar Rav Shimi Mehardo. So Rav Shimi Mehardo came with a different idea. He says, Kegoin says, look, let's take a different case. What is the other case? Shehidi Roba Rabi. That.
I have a problem.
Yeah.
Ishabidi Shah, so why isn't that the Hefetim, so why isn't that Hefetim so okay? Ishabidi Shah, then it is a case of.
Yeah, it's. No, you're right. All right.
So then what's the problem?
Then in that case, he would not get Malchus, because she is the one who made it impossible for him. You understand?
Did he come about the
way? Yeah, you're right. And in that case, she was the one who did it. Right. Exactly. She was the one who did it. In that case, he's not going to get Malchus because it wasn't his action. It was hers. Okay? But if he did it on his own, so how could he even have the chutzpah to do anything like that? Okay? Right. His action doesn't mean anything. So that's why Yelo Omar Rab Shimi Med Ado says, I'll give you different examples that could go on. For example, Shehidi Roh Barabim, that he said, I make a neder, right, that I will never have anything more to do with her. I refuse to live with her anymore.
Under any circumstances.
Yeah, under any circumstances. If he says something along those lines, then he's mavato, right? And how did he do it? He didn't do it privately to her, but he did it barabim. He did it publicly. Everybody should know, I refuse to live with, and I'm taking an edah that I refuse to live with this woman, ever. Mm. Okay? So, what is the problem here?
It says,
we'll see in a second. The problem is, obviously, if it weren't done publicly, then privately, you know, the parties could come to, let's say, to a Rav Mufhak, okay, or to a Beis Din. By Rav Mufhak, I mean a rabbi who is recognized as being an authority, okay? That's what we mean by a Rav Mufhak, okay? So a rabbi, right, the authority, you know, a rabbi who is established as being, you know, extremely well versed and an authority, okay? They could come and, you know, explain what the circumstances were, and he asked pertinent questions like, did you realize when you made, you know, that you were doing this, that, or the other thing? And if the answer is, no, I didn't really realize what the consequences of what I said would be, then in that case, we say that a Beis Din of three, or a Rav Mufhak, in either case, they can be, as we would say, matir the neder. What is matir the neder? It means that you release the person who made the neder from the vow. Okay? Like, for example, when we have, let's say, Erev Rosh Hashanah, we have Hatoras the Dor. Okay? We sit down before three people and we say, you know, I made the Dorim and so on. I didn't realize, you know, what I did and so on. So then the Beis Din says, you know, Mutalecho, Mochalecho, etc., etc. Okay? In other words, you are released from the vow that you made. Okay? So, Hidiro Barabim, he did it in the presence of the multitude. In other words, everybody was standing around and he said so aloud in their presence. So he says, Vanicho, in accordance with the opinion of the Mando Omar, who says, Neder Shehuda Barabim, right? If the Neder has been vowed before a public, then ain lo hafor. Then in that particular case, there is no way in order to annul this vow that was made. Okay? Elo lamandu Omar, but if you follow the opinion of yesh lo hafor, in other words, that even a neder which is made publicly, it is possible to, you know, for the authorities to release him from the vow, then Mayikalamema, what are we going to say? So it comes up with a different idea, namely the Madiro Law al Das Rabim, that he declares that his neder is to take effect against her with the general agreement, as we would say, a consensus on the part of everybody that he's doing the right thing. Okay? The Omar Amemor, as Amemor said, Hilchasoy said, the Halacha says as follows, that Neder Shehuda Barabim, that if the Neder was announced, right, in the presence of people, then in that particular case, Yeshle Hafora, then this Neder can be revoked, okay? Can be annulled, which is the more correct term, all right? But Aldas Rabim, if it is together with everybody else's consensus, then in that case, Ein Lo Hafora, then there is no way to be mater this particular neder.
Why wouldn't you consider saying neder to Masha Kasupatar?
That's another problem. Exactly.
I was looking through. So
you're absolutely right. You're right.
The neder shouldn't take effect.
The neder should not take effect. But this is how the argument is running at the moment. So obviously they're going to be mavatal this argument.
Okay?
Because we're looking for where is there another case. So at this moment, this would seem to be the other case. Now, obviously, they're going to dispute it by pointing out exactly what you said, namely what? That if a person makes a neder which is completely opposite to what the Torah commands us, then in that particular case, his neder has no effect whatever. And of course, you know, the outstanding example. I mean, what did he say to her? He says, I refuse to live with you, right? Now, what does a man have to do according to the Torah if he's living with his wife? there are three basic things that he's required to do. Right?
Let's see.
Now, exactly what each one means, that is subject to dispute. But the general idea is that she'ero usually means that it means that he has to provide her food, okay? Because she'er sometimes refers to food, okay? Kisusa, as you explained, he must clothe his wife. In other words, he has to provide her with enough money to go out to Marshall's or to Filene's or something, right? Maybe to go to Mary Wentworth, at least. And Einosa, he's not allowed to deprive her of sexual satisfaction. Right. This is so. If a man says, I refuse to do any of these things, all of these things, whatever, then in that case, his neder has no effect, whatever, because he is, you know, taking neder against what is written in the Torah. There are other things, too. I mean, a person could also, but this is a classic example of Madira, you know, doing it, you know, opposite to what the Torah itself commanded, okay? All right. So, let's take a look for a moment at the Rashi over here. First of all, Masavir Nalika, the second of the big lines over there. You see that? It says Masavir Nalika. He has to marry her, right? And he doesn't get Malkus. So Apkan, so even over here, says Rashi, Tola Peturo Shal Malkus. He made the fact that he's not going to get Malkus dependent upon what? Bekim Ha'ase. That he's going to fulfill the affirmative, which says that he has to remarry her, right? So that Nichon amounted to me in accordance with one who holds the following opinion, Lord Kiyamu, right? That he did not fulfill what the Besdin told him to do immediately, then Loike. And then he gets Malkus for that, so much kachas pay Malkus for Loike. Then in that case, we can find, you know, that he's going to get Malkus because he did not do what the Besdin told him to do. Okay? But if we follow the opinion of the one who says he doesn't get Malkos unless he simply destroyed the possibility of fulfilling, you know, the affirmative action, then in that case, Leka, he gets, you know, Malkos then. Where do we find it? So, granted, we say that when it came to the problem of, you know, setting the mother bird free, right? Mashkachas law. We find, namely, as we said before, that if he killed it, right? Bitlo, right?
Mm-hmm.
He destroyed the possibility, kshashachta, when he slaughtered the bird. Elohocha. But here, eichem mashkachas law. How can we say, you know, in the case of a man who is told that you have to remarry her, where are we going to find a case of being?